Hello, this is Sharon. I'm here with the pantograph for Wednesday, October 10th, 2018. We will begin today's reading on the front page with an article headlined, "Miniature Horses Make Big Impact at Heartland. Therapy Animals Help Ease Students' Stress During Exams." A horse is a horse, of course. And several miniature versions spent Tuesday corralling the stress of midterm exams for a lot of Heartland Community College students. The three horses from Mini Visits in Fisher were a welcome break for students who practically arrived at a gallop to hug and pet the therapy horses. Faye Freeman Smith, Heartland's Director of Student Counseling, was pleased with the turnout. The college regularly has visits from therapy dogs, but the miniature horses were a first for Heartland. The visit wasn't just horseplay. As we have seen with our therapy dog visits, animal-assisted therapy can enhance a student's mood, helping them center and refocus, said Freeman Smith. College is stressful, especially for first-year students who are transitioning into a new environment and new mindset, she said. Studies show 80% of first-time college freshmen experience stress. Many community college students are juggling work and family responsibilities along with schoolwork, she noted. A herd of students, as well as faculty and staff, approached the horses as they were led from a van behind the Student Commons building. "They're just the sweetest things," said Renee Lewis, faculty advisor for the campus chapter of NAMI, the National Alliance for the Mentally Ill, which co-sponsored the visit along with Student Counseling Services. Colton Mooberry of Bloomington, a sophomore in nursing who is president of the NAMI at Heartland, said planning began last year. "There's a lot of stress during midterms, and stress leads to higher chances of mental illness," explained Mooberry. One goal of the visit was to raise awareness of NAMI and of counseling services offered at Heartland. Freshman Brenna Long of Normal was among those who gathered to meet Coco, Rascal, and Star. "I had four or five assignments due yesterday," said Long. "This is a nice little stress reliever." Another freshman, Emily Kurtzkampf of Bloomington, took a break from studying for a midterm exam on Wednesday to see the horses. "They have therapy dogs, but I thought this would be different and fun," she said. Deb Murphy, founder and director of Mini Visits, started her company while she was working as a special education teacher in Urbana School District 116, from which she retired in 2010. "Research has shown petting animals lowers your blood pressure and has a calming effect," said Murphy, who has seen that effect firsthand. "When an ill-timed rain shower forced a move inside the building, everyone took the change in stride. The equivalent of a horse diaper eased stress for those concerned with a potential cleanup crisis. Even a security guard watching over the event took time to pet one of the horses." Youngsters from Heartland's Child Development Lab also came to see the horses, but the young at heart were just as enthralled. "I love how it made adults turn into kids," said Camille Springer, a licensed counselor at the college. "Training a miniature horse to become a therapy animal starts with choosing those with the right temperament, and then they have to be desensitized to crowds and being handled and to noises," said Murphy. "We've walked them through bubble machines, walked them through balloons, and the horses have spent lots and lots of hands-on time with my grandchildren," she said. Rivian to debut vehicles in November. CEO Scaringe shares company's progress and vision at a Bloomington Normal event. Rivian Automotive's first vehicles to be made in Normal will debut just after Thanksgiving and showcase in the Twin Cities soon after. The electric car startup that bought the former Mitsubishi Motors North America plant in Normal will show off its 5-passenger pickup truck and 7-passenger sport utility vehicle on November 26th and 27th at the Los Angeles International Auto Show. A tour will follow. It's really fun to be part of a community you feel and can sense is rooting for you, said Rivian CEO R.J. Skirange of the Anticipation Building in Bloomington Normal for the company's products. It's exciting to know how closely we're being watched, and I say that with a smile. Skirange spoke about the company's progress, its vision, and its place in the McLean County before more than 500 people at Tuesday's Community Leaders Dinner, presented by the Bloomington Normal Economic Development Council at the DoubleTree by Hilton in Bloomington. Skirange said the company is working hard to retrofit the Mitsubishi plant to fit its needs, a process expected to take 18 to 24 months and lead into a market debut in 2020. The company now has about 65 employees in Normal. Bloomington Normal will be one of the first places to sell the vehicles thanks to a factory store, Skirange said, to raucous applause, and pre-orders will open shortly after the vehicle's debut in November. Rivian hopes to expand to 100 sales markets within 6 or 7 years of the launch. Skirange again referred to an approaching inflection point in the history of the automobile, meaning Rivian thinks of itself as a technology company as much as an automotive manufacturer. It has about 450 employees nationwide, including its autonomous driving center in San Jose, California, its battery development center in Irvine, California, and its automotive development hub in Livonia, Michigan, a suburb of Detroit. In 50 or 100 years, it's indisputable the world will need to transition to things run on electrons from things run on fossil fuels, said Skirange, of the wide application of its battery technology, which will take its SUV up to 450 miles on a charge and could be used in personal watercraft, snowmobiles, and forklifts. Being optimized real-time, constantly adjusting to be the best battery for me, increases the health and life of the battery, he added. Skirange said the company's focus on computer-controlled or aided driving is intended to work all the way from the current limitations of emergency braking or steering to a world 20, 30, or 40 years in the future, when cars are completely self-driving. This is not a light switch. We won't wake up tomorrow with the car driving itself, said Skirange, noting cars will need to drive much more safely electronically to prevent the tens of thousands in vehicle fatalities currently recorded with human drivers. Things have to be orders of magnitude safer than human operation to become mainstream. Skirange said self-driving cars will free vehicles to function completely differently from how they do now, where a vehicle is owned by a person or group of people and sits unused most of the time. He imagines a world in which a Rivian vehicle is constantly being hailed and learns from its trips to recommend adventures to passengers. Skirange said he's not yet sure when the company will begin talking seriously with United Auto Workers Local 2488, which represented Mitsubishi workers there. Governor Bruce Rauner, a Winnetka Republican, has said union regulations drive businesses out of the state and prevented a more established user from occupying the plant Rivian bought with substantial local and state tax breaks. Scaringe said the company remains ahead of schedule to land those breaks, including a $1 million award from the town of Normal, millions in property tax abatements, and about $50 million in state income tax credits. And here's today's Flick Fact. Question: do you know what happened 43 Octobers ago that put downtown Bloomington and suburban Downs on the world map? And the answer? It was October 1975 when Jill DeVry, a downtown Bloomington salesperson who lived in Downs, became a Playboy magazine Playmate of the Month and also the very first Playmate to sign her centerfold. Her photo and autograph are on display at a Playboy photographic exhibition in Los Angeles that features the highlights of Hugh Hefner's famed enterprising career. DeVry later appeared in Risky Business, the movie that put then-unknown actor Tom Cruise on the map, too. Today, she is 67 years old and, according to the last report, lives in Chicago. Today in history. Today is Wednesday, October 10th, and it's the 283rd day of 2018. There are only 82 days left in this year. Today's highlights. On October 10, 1973, Vice President Spiro T. Agnew, accused of accepting bribes, pleaded no contest to one count of federal income tax evasion and resigned from office. Thought for today: the opposite of a fact is falsehood, but the opposite of one profound truth may very well be another profound truth. And that was spoken by Niels Bohr. Fire department receives grants. Four pantograph area fire departments are among 78 Illinois fire departments sharing $77,000 in grants through the Illinois American Waters 2018 Firefighter Grant Program. Departments receiving grants include Lincoln Fire Department, Lincoln Rural Fire Department, Pontiac Fire Department, and Sonneman Fire Protection District. The grants are to provide protective gear, communication equipment, firefighting tools, water handling equipment, training materials, or classroom programs. Setting it right, haunted places. The Palmer House Hotel is in Sauk Center, Minnesota. The location was incorrect in the pantograph because of incorrect information supplied by the Tribune Service. And continuing with some more local news, city okays permits for boat docks. All Lake Bloomington boat dock owners will be eligible to apply for a permit as long as they maintain a valid lake property lease and a residence on the leased land. A new $250 permit fee will be waived for the 236 existing docks, including 16 non-conforming ones at the center of a three-year dispute with the city. But they will need to pay a $50 annual renewal fee, which also is new. Those provisions, along with requiring the docks to be insured and inspected by the city, are part of a new ordinance spelling out the permitting process and construction standards for docks at the lake. The city owns the land surrounding the lake, which is Bloomington's primary water source. The council's adoption of the ordinance Monday night by a unanimous vote is expected to resolve the dispute. At issue were docks built by lake residents whose property is not directly on the lakefront. The illegal docks were erected on shorelines set aside for access by the public, including those lake residents who do not have property on the water, according to city officials. Many of the non-conforming docks have been there for years, often with informal permission, but Bloomington officials now consider docks erected without official permits to be trespassing on city-owned property. City Attorney Jeff Jurgens and Michael Felipe, an attorney who represents many of the non-compliant dock owners, both said the ordinance will place all leaseholders at the lake on equal footing with respect to how the docks will be permitted and regulated. Several lake residents whose docks were not part of the dispute asked the council during the public comment portion of the meeting to delay voting on the measure until all leaseholders at the lake receive official notice and a public hearing is held. The alderman rejected that request. Attorney Peter Brandt, who has a cabin at the lake, contended that such notice and a hearing are required under the terms of the property leases. Without a notice and without a hearing, the change adopted Monday night will be a change in the ordinance without an opportunity for the leaseholders to comment, said Brandt. City Attorney Jeff Jurgens disagreed. Our stake is that this does not impact the lease purposes, said Jurgens. Yes, those that have a lease are going to be eligible for the program, but this is something that does not require a public hearing. Lake resident Kevin Hoot said he sees the ordinance as penalizing the vast majority of Lake Bloomington dock owners who are in compliance with the city codes. Tonight, you are going to vote on an 11-page ordinance to address an issue that grew out of 16 illegal docks on the lake, said Hoot. Why should we ask those who are not in violation to be penalized and incur a charge because of the 5% who are in violation? Jurgens said the $50 renewal fee was justified to fund the permitting process. This is not, as somebody suggested, necessarily a money grab or tax, he said. This is just really meant to be a nominal fee that will help cover the cost of the program. The ordinance limits the total number of permits to 245. The city will continue to try to resolve issues with about 8 dock owners who do not have a lease with the city or do not maintain a residence at the lake. Seeking new challenge, engineer becomes judge. Duffy begins term for 11th District and will hear family court cases. Sarah Duffy was looking for a new challenge when she traded a career in industrial engineering for law school. The new associate judge for the 11th Judicial Circuit worked as an information technology consultant for a Chicago firm after graduating from the University of Illinois with an industrial engineering degree in 1999. She went on to work as a system analyst for State Farm until 2004, when her life took a new direction. I was looking for a different challenge. I decided on the law, said Duffy, who has settled into her new office on the third floor of the McLean County Law and Justice Center, where she began work about a month ago, after being selected in July by the circuit judges of the 11th Judicial Circuit to serve as the newest associate judge. The law appealed to Duffy on several levels. The idea of the personal interactions and the ability to help people in difficult times. After she graduated from the U of I College of Law in 2007, Duffy returned to her hometown of Pontiac and joined the Fellheimer Law Firm, the family law practice of Judge Mark A. Fellheimer, current Chief Judge of the 11th Judicial Circuit. Livingston County Judges Robert M. Travers and Jennifer Bochnick were mentors for Duffy as she considered a shift from systems analyst to attorney. McLean County Judge Rebecca Foley has that role now. Duffy considers her experience representing clients involved in family-related cases, including divorces, as a training ground for the matters she will hear during her family court assignment. The recognition that people in difficult situations want their side of a dispute to be heard is a key element of helping people resolve their differences in court, she said. I want people to believe they've had an opportunity to be heard. I also think people are typically happier if they reach a solution on their own. My goal is to resolve things by agreement, and if that's not possible, let the judge decide, said Duffy. She will attend her first official function on October 23rd as a moderator for a two-day conference sponsored by the McLean County Bar Association on guardian ad litem issues. Attorneys from 19 counties have registered for the conference in Normal. Duffy's work as a board member of Pontiac's Community Mental Health Agency, the Institute for Human Resources, also provided her with insight into the challenges facing people with substance abuse and behavioral health issues. Society in general has come to recognize the challenges of mental health. The same types of challenges exist in McLean County and other communities trying to get people the services they need, she said. Joe Vaughn, executive director of IHR, said the board benefited greatly from Duffy's 10 years of service. She took a very common sense approach to things. She always had the staff and clients in mind. The fact she knew everybody in Pontiac was a real plus, said Vaughn. Duffy begins her term as an associate judge at a time when the qualifications of lawyers to serve on the bench have been the focus of national attention, with the controversial appointment of Judge Brett Kavanaugh to the U.S. Supreme Court. We are fortunate in our circuit to have a group of judges who understand their role and take it very seriously, said Duffy. Fairness and an appropriate demeanor while serving on the bench is something we're all cognizant of. Shakespeare Fest plans to expand reach. Past season sees solid attendance. The Illinois Shakespeare Festival had a good season with increased season subscription sales and satisfactory attendance, say event officials. We had a great company of actors with great camaraderie. Morale was good, said Artistic Director John Stark. Attendance was about the same as last year, but with fewer performances, said Stark, adding that meant larger audiences for each performance and lower costs. This season's productions were Henry V, Merry Wives of Windsor, and Shakespeare in Love. The last production was presented at Illinois State University's Center for the Performing Arts, while the other two took place at the Ewing Theater on the grounds of the Ewing Cultural Center. We had growing pains for one show on campus, Stark said. Of the Shakespeare in Love production, our audience is getting used to that. Among the highlights cited by Stark was bringing a scale model of Shakespeare's Second Globe Theater to ISU from New Mexico. The nearly 12-foot-high model was assembled in the lobby of the CPA and has remained there. Janet Wilson, the festival's producer and director of ISU's School of Theater and Dance, said the festival did a terrific job with season subscriptions this year, selling 835, an increase of 311 over last year. Bill worked hard on that, referring to William Prenevost, the festival's managing director. That task will fall to someone else next year. Prenavast, an ISU alumnus who became managing director in January 2017, stepped down in July. He said he decided to retire early after being told his contract would not be renewed. Wilson declined to discuss the circumstances of the departure or confirm that he was told his contract would not be renewed. Penavos said he clashed with administrators regarding the strategic planning process and a legal dispute concerning the interpretation of tax laws related to housing provided to out-of-town actors and others who were part of the summer festival. Although he retired early, Prenavast remained involved in a few fundraising events he helped to create, the Bard Bash that took place at the end of the festival. Stark said the Bard Bash was a beautiful idea to end the season. About 125 to 130 people attended the event, which included food, cabaret-style entertainment from members of the Shakespeare Company, and ended with dancing under the stars on the Ewing stage. "We would like to expand the Bard Bash," said Stark. Prenavast, in an interview after he left, said he wanted to make the festival more successful and was always curious why it hadn't grown more. The festival raised its profile this year by collaborating with Bloomington's Lincoln's Festival on Route 66 and Looking for Lincoln. There was a Shakespeare in the Land of Lincoln lecture series and a play with an Abraham Lincoln theme in its theater for young audiences. The play for youth, Double Double, toured several locations in central Illinois, not just Bloomington Normal. The festival also got a publicity boost when the Chicago Tribune named it one of the state's 20 must-see cultural attractions. But Stark said the focus is on attracting more people from the nearby communities of Peoria, Decatur, Champaign, Urbana, and Springfield, which he described as having tons of potential. "I'm always just amazed by the generosity and support we get from the community. It's a long-standing tradition," Stark said of the festival, which completed its 41st season this year. "We want to be good stewards of the traditions, but keep looking at new ways to produce Shakespeare." How time flies. 100 years ago today, the flu outbreak is making it too dangerous for crowds, so movie makers will release no new films after October 15th, and the local streetcar line is disinfecting all the cars. In college football, 20 games were called off. 75 years ago, on October 10, 1943, men who were fathers before Pearl Harbor can expect to be drafted starting this month. State Selected Service Director Colonel Paul Armstrong said the supply of candidates who don't have the 3A, father deferment, is about exhausted. 50 years ago, in 1968, reporter Bill Wills discovered that the Bloomington City Council has held about 6 private dinner meetings at the Rogers Hotel and billed taxpayers for the food. The media never got word of any of it, but by law should have been notified. And 25 years ago today, in 1993, the Wrong Way Cafe in Downs, the town's only eatery, is closing. Building owner Shirley Wheeler isn't making enough revenue to justify the upgrades it needs, despite manager Maxine Hamplin's keeping the place up. Too bad. At $3.65, the lunch special was unbeatable. We'll take a short break now and then return with the second half hour of the Pantograph for Wednesday, October 10th, 2018. Please stay tuned.